You're tuned to Home Fries, New York City at 99.5 FM. Good Nachten, and Zinze Pesach, and a good Easter, and I'll see you not next week or the week after, but in 2 weeks. I'll be back, actually in 3 weeks. Next week, Mike Fader will be here on Home Fries, and the week after, a surprise for you. Stick around for Hafe Salase's Larbersh, and then at midnight tonight, the Midnight Ravers with a special. If you want to see Metropolitan Klezmer, who just sang the last song, give me a ring at 209-2900. Once Hafe plays some music, I'll be able to get to the phones. And I have tickets for Metropolitan Klezmer. They're playing the first Saturday in April at a synagogue out there in Long Beach. Oh, my God. There's so many synagogues, I won't be able to tell you. Let's see. I'll have to get your names, then I'll call you and tell you which synagogue, because I left a little postcard home. This is listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM.
We took back our station. Now let's get together and celebrate and continue to support Free Speech Radio. Come to a Victory Dance fundraiser at the Montclair Unitarian Church in Montclair, New Jersey at 87 Church Street off Bloomfield Avenue. When is it? Saturday, March 23rd at 7:30. Just show up and you're going to get to dance with and hear Bernard White, Amy Goodman, Dan Coughlin, Mimi Rosenberg, and other producers. How much? $20. And all proceeds will go to our station, WBAI. Sponsored by the Bergen Green Party of New Jersey, New Jersey Concerned Friends of WBAI, New Jersey Peace Action, People's Organization for Progress, the Undoing Racism Committee, and IFCO Pastors for Peace. For more information, call 201-342-9061. That's 201-342-9061. Let's dance the night away. See you there.
I'd like to give a shout out to all the prisoners throughout the world.
As the prison population explodes, the authorities have an excuse for abuse, transferring inmates without warning from one prison to another, allegedly in search of an available bed. Your mail or commissary won't be forwarded, and just keeping in touch becomes a challenge. Stay in contact with the Prisoner Shoutout Line, broadcasting your voice messages every Saturday afternoon in Radio Free Aaron about 5 minutes to 3 and ending in the Gut Bucket Matinee. There's a repeat broadcast Tuesday morning around 1:40 a.m. in Person to Person. The Prisoner Shoutout Line, 212-209-2958. That's 212-209-2958.
I love you, man. And we miss you out here. And you're going to be back out here soon.
If music is a universal language, then St. Croix's super reggae band Midnight have spoken fluently. Formed in 1989 by the brothers Vaughn and Ron Benjamin, already a local phenomenon in parts of the Americas and the Caribbean region, and a band on the verge of becoming a household name in the international scene. Join the Midnight Ravers on Friday, March 22nd, 2002, from 12 midnight to 3 a.m. on WBAI 99.5 in New York City, as we present from St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands, reggae's most exciting roots band, Midnight. Featured will be tracks from live performances from their recent critically acclaimed U.S. tour. That's on Friday, March 22nd, 2002, 12 midnight to 3 a.m., right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
I'm a radio listener, more than a TV person, because I'm always on the go. The thing that kept me in contact with the world and with what's going on is the radio.
I've been away for so long, but I wonder.
And I listen to WBAI a lot.
Is the sound of the times right?
Tune in, All Mixed Up.
With Angelique Kidjo, stay tuned.
Saturday afternoon at 3. All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp. Here on WBAI.
WBAI in New York City with Angeline Kidjo. Stay tuned.
Saturday afternoon at 3.
You're listening to WBAI New York. It is 5 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program you just heard, Home Fries with Fred Hershkovitz, is heard here each week from 8 p.m. until midnight. I was saying until midnight. You know, it's I had to break out of my Jacques cool to...
How long show you ever did, time-wise?
Like 20-something hours.
You did 20 hours in a row?
Yeah, it was a special... Yeah, no, it was a Bob Marley thing, you know. Yeah, that stuff. You know, we did a few of those. So let's say again, it is 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. You're listening to WBAI Radio in New York City. The previous program, Home Fries with Fred Hershkovitz, is heard each week from 8 p.m. until 10. And coming up next will be Labrish. Which part of there?
Good morning. Welcome to Labrish. I am Haptah Selassie. Labrish is a production of the Jazz Mac Associates. Everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
ask you to answer for me is this. Right here now.
Is it possible I could feel this cool? I could really love you the way I do. Is it possible I could feel this good? I could really love you the way I do. See me
WBAI New York at 21 minutes past 10 o'clock. You're listening to Labrish. My name is Hapta Selassie, and we're having a, I guess it has to be called a special program tonight, because it is a little bit different in terms of things that I usually do, or we usually do here on Labrish. But I think that because of recent events, things pertaining to this radio station, to this network, and also because of the insistence of the gentleman here, Sean Rhodes. He has to take the credit for this program happening in the first place, because of his insistence and encouragement. We're doing it, and we're happy to be doing it. We'll be having a discussion a little bit in moments about then Pacifica and some of the things that has transpired recently or not so long ago. And we hope that you will stay tuned for it. And for those of you who are wondering, you know, that I guess you're accustomed to a program having a discussion, and when we open, we begin with the discussion. But because of who I am, you have to be seasoned with a little music to put the nerve cells in the right places and, you know, like, get easy so that we can talk. The music you heard going from bottom to top, we just heard from Ernest Ranglin, an album entitled E.B. at Noon, okay? I have a feeling it is supposed to be E.R. at Noon, okay? But it is listed as E.B. at Noon. I don't know what E.B. is. I'm figuring it should be Ernest Ranglin at Noon, but the title is E.B. at Noon. And the piece that we heard was, Scare That, right? Or, you know, Drive It Away. But instead of saying Drive It Away, you say Scare It Away, okay? Which, well, it is kind of a colloquialism. Scare with that. Before that, we heard from Sade with Flo. Beautiful song. And that is from her album, Lovers Rock. And before we opened with, of course, James Marshall Hendrix, or Jimi Hendrix. And the piece that we heard was Axis, Bold as Love. And let me say, my guests tonight are Sean Rhodes. I guess I'll list him as a co-producer of this segment of Labrish. And we also have Carol Spooner, who I understand is on telephone.
Hi.
You're there.
Yes,
wonderful.
I am.
And good to have you. And welcome to Labrish. And if this is your first time on WBAI, welcome
yeah,
to WBAI
sure.
too. Well, anyway, not your first. That's good. First time on Labrish, I'm sure, though.
Yes.
Unless you call in somehow. So, Ms. Spooner, welcome. And she's Secretary of the Interim Pacifica National Board. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so far I got that straight. And then we have Andrea Fishman.
And, hi.
Did I say something wrong?
No. Hello.
Oh, okay. And she's the Elections Committee of Concerned Friends of WBAI. And we also have Mr. Ray LaForest. And he is, Interim Pacifica National Board member and a lab member also, and a member of, is it the WBAI committee? I will have to find out exactly what all of these things mean. And of course, Sean Rhodes. Good to see you here too, sir.
Good evening. Wait, is my mic on? Do you have me up?
I most certainly do.
Okay.
It might be difficult in terms of you hearing yourself in your headphones, but
okay.
We're hearing you, and you're registering quite fine.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So, good evening, Mr. Selassie. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, Hapta is good enough.
I know you like to season the pot, so I'm doing my part to help season.
Okay.
Yes, as you said, this is a bit of a departure from what you normally do. And I think I should start off by sharing or elaborating a little bit more on how the show came into being and what I hope to accomplish tonight. In late January of this year, I realized that there was a lot of hoopla concerning the return of the Band and Fired to WBAI, and rightfully so. But what was not being widely publicized was the fact that in place there was a settlement of the various lawsuits brought against the Pacifica Foundation, which holds the license for WBAI and four other stations across the country. And those four other stations are WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFT in Houston, Texas, KPFA in Berkeley, California, and KPFK in Los Angeles, California. What also was not being widely publicized was the fact that the settlement was in effect until March of 2003 and greatly impacts on how WBAI, its sister stations, and Pacifica operate not only now but well into the future. And again, this was not widely being publicized. So I brought this observation to Hop Day's attention, and he decided we should do a show on the subject. So that's how this show came about. And it was simply a matter of finding the right day when we could do the show. So that's why you're hearing it today. Now, in terms of the goal for tonight's show, after listening to the show, I'd like listeners to know that, A, there is a settlement in place, B, what the terms of the settlement are, C, what new structures are being created to meet the terms of the settlement, D, as I said in the cart that's been running about the show, find out what all of this means to you, the listener, E, as Hopte has been known to say in the past, gain some sort of understanding, F, find out how you can plug into this process, you, the listener, so you should have a pen and paper handy, because there will be website URLs, phone numbers, and meeting dates, times, and locations given out. And most importantly, G, get ideas from you, listeners, as how we should, as we proceed to build the other station and the network. So those of you who thought once your favorite producer came back, you could go home and go about your business, that's not the case. Now the real work begins. We have to strengthen and preserve the station and the network, and you, the listener, play a crucial role in that process. So that's the goal. Let's see. So just to give a little bit of history before I start asking my questions so that we're all on the same page. There are those who would say that the various lawsuits were brought about due to the increasing corporatization of Pacifica and how that impacted on the other stations that make up the network. There was a centralization of power, an elimination of radical programming and radical dissident voices, also some fiscal malfeasance. So, Carol.
Yeah.
There's a long history to all of this, and you know that's a show unto itself. Mm-hmm. But and hopefully that history will come out as this discussion, goes on. But for right now, could you briefly describe the various lawsuits and what form of redress was being sought in each?
Yes, I can. I want to say before I do that, just briefly, that there were changes going on throughout the network at the various stations beginning in 1992, as radical programming was eliminated first in Washington, then in Houston, then in 1995 at the Los Angeles station, and a great deal of it was eliminated at KPFA in Berkeley at that time. These things were going on, and nobody knew how to put an end to it. Various programmers were banned and fired throughout the network, and they could not find enough people to listen to them to bring about wide public concern. But in 1997 and 1999, the Pacifica Foundation Board of Directors illegally changed the Pacifica bylaws. For about 20 years, since the early 1984, the bylaws had provided that each of the five local station boards, which are currently called local advisory boards or labs, but were originally called local station boards, had the right to elect directors of the Pacifica Foundation. And the bylaws were changed in 1997 to eliminate that right without a vote of approval from the local boards. That's illegal under the nonprofit corporations law that governs Pacifica. Pacifica is incorporated as a nonprofit public benefit corporation in the state of California, and California nonprofit law governs Pacifica and all of its stations, including BAI in New York. So the bylaws were illegally amended in 1997, eliminating the right of the local boards to elect directors, and then illegally amended again in 1999, February of 1999, eliminating the right of the local boards even to nominate directors. So about that time, the local boards were getting very concerned about this and wondering what they could do and looking into their legal options. Shortly after the bylaws were amended, our station manager at KPFA, which is where I'm from, was fired, and then people started going on the air talking about it, and they were fired. And then KPFA, in July of 1999, was occupied by armed security guards, and the staff was locked out for 23 days. At that point, the first lawsuit was filed by members of four of the five local boards, including members of the BAI local board, challenging the bylaws amendments. At that point, I had helped to do some of the research to bring that suit to court, but I felt that it didn't go far enough because it didn't ask the court to remove the directors of the foundation for breach of trust and for diverting Pacifica from its founding purposes. And I thought that that really needed to be done. Anyone who could authorize the armed occupation of the station didn't, in my view, was unfit to serve as a director. At that point, I learned that listeners didn't have standing to sue. Those of us who donate our money and volunteer our time have no standing to sue. So we had to go to the California Attorney General and ask him to bring the lawsuit. So we filed a petition in the fall of 1999 with the California Attorney General for standing to sue. He sat on it for 10 months, but eventually he agreed with us that something was very seriously wrong at Pacifica. The bylaws amendments were troubling to him. The diversion from the Pacifica's founding purposes was very disturbing to him. Expenditures of money that were quite questionable were disturbing to him. So he authorized our lawsuit, which was brought actually by the California Attorney General, but prosecuted by listeners, myself and 11 others from all five Pacifica stations. And we hired a lawyer to actually carry out and prosecute the case. So that case was filed, and shortly thereafter, two directors from the old board who were very upset and concerned about the direction of Pacifica also filed suit. They were Rob Robinson and Rabbi Kriegel. Robinson is a director from Washington, and Kriegel was from Los Angeles. So there were now three lawsuits. And then, finally, a fourth suit was filed by three more dissident directors, Leslie Kagan, Tomas Moran, and Pete Bramson. So we now had four lawsuits that had been in process and filed consecutively between July of 1999 and May of 2001, when the fourth one was finally filed. The court consolidated all of these actions in June of 2001. And at that point, I won't go through all the history of all the work that was done to get us to that point. Pacifica had yanked the lawsuits up to federal court, and we had to get them removed back to state court, and a lot of the expensive delaying tactics. But all of this was going on before the WBAI events of December 2001 happened for a year and a half. There was a lot going on in the court. So in June, the suits were consolidated, and we were moving forward, pressing for trial that was supposed to take place in January of this year. A tremendous amount of work was done. Depositions were taken. That's where you sit a witness down in front of a court reporter and ask them questions under oath. Boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of documents were subpoenaed, and we were organizing those and preparing for trial. And eventually, through the work of many people across this country who were very concerned about Pacifica, the pressure on the old board of directors caused them to agree to settle these cases and create a transfer of control of Pacifica from the old board majority, which definitely I think we can say without any doubt was committed to mainstreaming Pacifica's radio content, eliminating the more radical political content, and very seriously looking into selling radio stations WBAI and KPFA, which are have commercial licenses and are worth a great deal of money. But they had finally run out of both money and whatever else, and they did agree in November of 2001 to settle the lawsuits. There were some difficulties reaching an agreement, but eventually, through the with the effort of the judge who met with us for 19 hours on one day, we were eventually able to reach a settlement agreement that authorized an interim board of directors for a period of 15 months. This interim board has five directors appointed by the old board majority on it, five directors appointed by the old board minority on it, and one director appointed by each of the five local boards. So that's a 15-person board. And this board has to do a number of things, but one of the things that it has to do during this period of time that is really the subject of our conversation tonight is to rewrite the bylaws of the Pacifica Foundation to provide for elected local boards and an elective process for the National Board of Directors. So what we have to do is, over this period of time, come up with a new governance system that distributes power and authority and responsibility for the governance of Pacifica in such a way, we hope, to protect Pacifica from ever again being taken over by those who are not supportive of its mission and purposes, and build some safeguards into the governance structure so that this can't happen again. I'm done with that long spiel.
No, it was very appropriate because it answered a number of questions that I was going to bring to. So like, you just went right there. Well, let me just say this. I'll take care of the old station business. It's at 10:30 p.m. Yeah, 10:38 p.m. here at WBAI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial. My name is Sean Rose. This show is Labrish with Hafte Selassie, and you're listening to Carol Spooner on the phone. Also in the studio with us are Andrea Fishman, who is on the Elections Committee of Concerned Friends of WBAI, and Ray LaForest, who is a member of the Interim Pacifica National Board, the WBAI Committee, as well as the WBAI Local Advisory Board. Okay, Carol, you said that one of the tasks that this board has to undertake while it's in while it exists until March of 2003 is to make sure that elections take place at all five stations. People should know that that date has the election has to take place by December 29th, and that's because that's when the interim board had its first meeting. And according to the settlement, lab elections have to be held 1 year after the first meeting of the interim board. Now, at the March meeting of the Interim Pacifica National Board, which took place March 8th through 10th in California, to get this process started, you proposed, and it was accepted, that a national committee with subcommittees in each of the five areas be established to start writing bylaws and election guidelines in consultation with one another. Speak to us a little more about this, about the composition of these subcommittees and their purpose.
Yes. Well, one of the things that we're committed to doing is, well, I won't go there. We need to write bylaws that will receive a vote of approval of at least three of the five local boards, as well as a two-thirds majority vote of approval of the national board. So at least three out of the five local boards actually must approve the bylaws that specify how the local boards are elected and how the national board is elected. People have some questions about why they have to approve those bylaws, and I'd just like to digress a moment to explain that. Under the law, if somebody has rights existing in bylaws, You can't take those rights away from them without their vote of approval. The five local boards, which have existed from the beginning of Pacifica, have since 1984 had the right to elect directors. And as a result of the legal settlement, they did not give up their claim to having the right to elect directors. That did not go to trial. They still, their position is that they have the legal right to elect directors. So in order to change the bylaws in any way affecting the rights of the local boards as to how directors are elected or how many directors there are, or any bylaws that set criterion and rules for the election of the local boards, those boards must agree to them because it's a change in their rights. So we have to have the agreement of at least three of the five local boards, and we want a nationwide discussion of these issues involving our listeners. I can tell you over the last 2.5, almost 3 years now, that many of the most creative and forceful ideas about how to preserve Pacifica have come from listeners. I've learned that's what I am, so I'm partial to listeners too. we really need the joint wisdom of all of us, staff members, paid staff, unpaid staff, listeners, local board members, to figure out how to do this right. So we're setting up a national committee. I'm the chair of the national committee with five local subcommittees, one in each station area, and we're going to try to coordinate and communicate amongst the five subcommittees to come up with a unified approach. The subcommittees in each area must have at least one member of the interim board on it, and Ray LaForest and Janice K. Bryant are the co-chairs of the WBAI subcommittee. It must have at least three members of the local board on it, and I'm not sure who will be on it for WBAI yet, and as many members of the staff at WBAI and the listeners who want to come to these meetings and help with this brainstorming and work. So the five local committees will be open to the public. They will be discussion groups and brainstorming sessions to try to come up with and address many competing issues and interests and legitimate concerns about the future of Pacifica and try to work something out that will be acceptable to most people and effective and will work. So we set up the committee. We authorized the committees at the March meeting. They're just getting up and rolling and starting to hold meetings. I'm not sure when the first meeting in New York will be. Ray can tell you a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that was my next question. But did you want to tell us about the subcommittees and the various other single areas? Because I believe one or two of them have already been formed and started to meet already.
The Houston subcommittee is holding their first meeting tonight. And Berkeley KPFA subcommittee is holding their first meeting on next Tuesday evening. Washington, Los Angeles, and WBAI should be getting up and running and setting meetings soon, but we don't have dates yet.
Okay. All right. So, Ray, you have the floor. Where do things stand now? You're one of the co-chairs along with Janice K. Bryant, who's also on the Interim Pacific National Board.
Well, part of the reason we don't have a date is that it's been difficult communicating with Janice K. I'd like to add first that the three individuals who are representing the lab on that subcommittee are going to be Miguel Maldonado, who's the chair of the lab, Lee Kronick, who's the chair of the so-called exploratory committee of the lab, and Marion Bostin, who's the co-chair of the lab. Before I proceed, though, I had a question and a position statement to make. First, I wanted to know, I know that the advertisement for this show, I'd say that you'll be a lab member. Is it because I'm on the lab that you consider not having somebody else?
Yeah.
Oh, that is the reason?
Yeah.
Okay, no. Because as you know, there were some people who were interested in joining us.
Right.
Okay. The other question has to do with this show being after a show. And I don't function in a vacuum, and a lot of us do, whether we want it or not. And I want to make a position of statement that I understand that at this position during the coup was one of supporting the coup. I also was told today that that you made some statements that you felt that that your position was justifiable and that you maintained them. And I'm sorry to hear that. I felt that people can have differ on different levels. But that I feel very strongly that at this point we have serious evidence pointing to the fact that there were tremendous malfeasance, waste of resources, and including really incredible information that came to us that these people had actually hired a, what could be called, quote-unquote, a spy agency to look into our lives and our political activities. So I want to make sure that my presence here in Norway means that I dismiss those facts. And I'm hoping that they would consider, you know, would we consider his position on this topic. I don't know if you want to say anything about...
No, when you say reconsider my position on what? What topic?
On the history that Carol just described, that change in the nature of the system, and what happened specifically right here in WBAI.
Oh, the situation concerning the coup, as I've said before, I took a position... as I said, and you have said here, and others have said, I supported the coup. I looked at the coup as it was called, or it is called, as one that the question that I heard was one of Valerie Van Isler remaining here as a manager. At the time, I didn't think she was a good manager, and I supported her dismissal, or her being removed. And I'm hearing now that the very thing that was proposed before is what is supposed to be taking place. And I said, concerning the situation, as I say, regarding Valerie Van Isler being removed as manager and so on, I'm unapologetic about it. I took a position that I thought and still do believe is one based on my own integrity. And I have nothing to apologize about. And that is it. Everything else is open for debate.
Well, no, my point is that... Valerie Van Isler's history here took place within the context of, mm-hmm. Carol described some of it, of attempt at changing, not only actually changing the bylaws, illegally the bylaws of this organization, preventing local advisory boards and local areas from being represented directly on the national board, attempting to change the bylaws to allow a small group of individuals without giving much notice to the listeners to sell what would be quote-unquote, as long as they were not major assets within the corporation, mm-hmm. To me these are issues that are independent of Valerie's position.
Well, those things, as I said, those things are other things that we can always talk about. And I'm in a sense somewhat gratified that at least Sean Rhodes is here. I've spoken to him in the past, and I'm sure without having him having to say anything on my behalf, at least he would know specifically, as I said before, that the other issues that you're mentioning about bylaws and so on are not considerations that I had in terms of what was happening here, and that essentially I didn't see that. And I'm kind of sorry that that is what you're talking about here has become somewhat the focus of the discussion here tonight. But as I said before, and for people listening, both in the studio, outside of the studio, on the air, wherever you are, that whatever happened here on Friday night in December of, 2000?
2000.
That I saw as the removal of Valerie Van Isler, the manager of the station, in what I would consider the defiance of the order of the executive director and some of the things that I knew was taking place here in terms of what I heard at meetings in this building, in these premises. As I said, I unapologetically stated then that I support what happened, and I'm saying it right here, right now at 10 minutes of 11, that I'm still unapologetic about it.
May I come in for a moment?
Yeah. Can I add one more thing, though? Would you agree that this very discussion will not take place until there was change to allow it? Because the reason I'm raising this point is that my own personal experience has put me, unfortunately, in a situation where I've lived under dictatorship. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is a central question. Mm-hmm. If you have a system that does not allow people to function as true thinkers and really be able to express their opinion and grow, everything else becomes secondary.
Yeah.
so that no matter what else took place, if you have people who are spending at the rate of $5 million and bankrupting, resulting in the bankruptcy, near bankruptcy of the institution, refusing a process where people can speak freely under the cover of the discussing dirty, dirty. To me, that's the central point.
Well, again, a lot of then what you're mentioning, you know, people spending bankruptcy did not happen prior to then. I guess that would be the people that I would have then quote unquote supported, but they didn't spend $5 million prior to the night of the coup. That would have come afterwards. And I'm saying again that the position that I took, and I stated it quite clearly in meetings. Matter of fact, I said it then and I say it again here with pride, that I was the first person I heard in this station at any staff meeting who said Valerie Van Isla had to go. And I didn't say so based on anybody else's but Haptah Selassie's own views and own opinions. And I speak for myself then and I'm speaking for myself now. And I said, there are other issues that you can speak about, whether bylaws, whether about this, what the philosophy, whether the station was up for sale, whatever it is. All of those things are...
Or whether you can say it and still keep your job.
I think when you're going to interrupt what I'm saying, it may confuse people in terms of certain other things. As I said, I took a position, let me say, prior to the night of the coup, as I said, then that twice in staff meetings that I attended, I said my position was what I said in a staff meeting, that I saw the situation that was transpiring, that is between Pacifica's management, its executive director, and what I considered then an order by the executive director to the station manager here, which I would figure in terms of business and so on, you say her subordinate, to be one where she was reluctant to do something. And I said I agreed that she should go, whether she stayed here or no, whether she went or no. I did, that her position as continuing as manager of the station, I did not agree with. And as I said then, as I said here, I thought, and I said it in the staff meeting, that I thought that the situation that was transpiring, in my own words were, I saw it as a wonderful opportunity for the people who worked at WBAI to take charge of WBAI. And I said further that the situation was that we could keep Pacifica at bay, that Valerie Van Isla should understand quite clearly from us that our trying to keep Pacifica at bay was not in any way supportive of her continuing as manager here.
Could so, I come in for a
you
moment?
Know, you know, so just give me a second
sure,
there, because
sure.
As I said, I want people to have a clear understanding of what is what. And I think sometimes interjecting, and as I said, I really did not want to go there. And I figure that if I left it alone, it might create more confusion. But I was hoping that we would have been able to have then a discussion tonight, you know, in spite of Haptah Selassie, on the issue of Pacifica, because I am concerned then, I am mindful that there is a process that is ongoing that involves people who do listen to this station, and it's one of the things I wanted people to be able to have a clear idea of what their role is, what their position is, what, let me say, their rights are then as listeners in this particular process that is supposed to transpire, as I understand it, over a 15-month period starting as of last December.
If I may, for just a moment, one of the reasons why I feel that it is very important that we transition into a democratic organization with elections of local boards and national boards, is that it will require the discussion, the open discussion on the air and in other venues at local board meetings and staff meetings, issues central to the importance and to the survival of Pacifica and WBAI. For instance, it's clear that many, many people at WBAI did not know what was happening in the rest of the network prior to the Christmas coup, or perhaps even now. For instance, you said that the $5 million that was spent since the Christmas coup. That's correct, but $1 million was spent on the KPFA lockout. We have documents on that, too. A great deal of money was being just thrown down the drain in prior years, too. There was a major drain on Pacifica's assets and resources. And people may not know, but the radical programming, most of the African-American programmers and ethnic programs in Los Angeles and at KPFA and were eliminated over the last few years. And Houston station went to country music and on and on and on. And people did not realize that there were major changes in the character of the Pacifica Foundation and the network. WBAI was the last safe haven until recently, and what happened there often tended to be described in terms of personalities or certain producers, and I think that that's somewhat unfortunate because the larger issue about preserving the Pacifica Foundation as an alternative medium where people can hear things they don't hear elsewhere is so important in this country at this time. Our civil liberties are just are under attack. We're exporting war around the world, and it's very important that we preserve this. So I'd like to bring, if we can, the conversation back to what we need to do to hold elections and how we're going to do that, if I may.
Yeah, I agree completely. I agree completely, and part of this process is informing, giving listeners the information that they need, so that they know they can participate in this process.
If I may, because it is then one of the things of concern, that is, there is supposed to be elections and, let me say, local organizations in terms of local advisory boards and for these local advisory boards ultimately to have some input in terms of the national board.
Yeah.
Is there any provision for a continuous information being given to the public, that is to the listenership, as to, again, in terms of things being defined as what their role is in this process, how they can participate, then, you know, how would somebody be deemed eligible then to vote, to, as I said, to participate in the process? Is there anything that is laid out that defines that?
Right. We're, I don't want to monopolize, maybe Ray can answer that question, but all of the meetings of the Bylaws Revisions Committee must be open to the public and must be announced on the air so that people can come to these meetings. We do need to have more conversations on the air about more reports to the listener and discussions on the air. We are a radio network, and many people can't come to meetings, but they can listen. That's going to be extremely important as we move forward. The discussions over the coming year are going to be about voting rights. Who gets to vote? The way we settled the lawsuits was that we would start with the KPFA model because we did, on our own, start electing our local board 2 years ago. We've had two elections. In the KPFA model, we have a 22-person local board. 14 of the members of the board, local board, are elected directly by listeners, and those who are entitled to vote are anyone who contributes $25.